Okay, so I've changed the presentation a little bit based upon the fact that we have a lot more people here than we expected, which is really surprising because this is a design for non-designers session, and we thought there might be some people who are interested, but there's actually a lot of people, about, I guess, 750 people checked that this is something that they're interested in. And just with a show of hands, how many people here would consider themselves developer, more developer than anything? Okay, see? See, I know you guys want to know this stuff. And so what I'm going to do is try to make this presentation really helpful to you to help you understand some concepts that will help you along the way. I know there are some designers here. I might as well. The three of you, where are you? Okay, yeah. I can't even see hands. So designers, raise your hands again. Yeah, see? Okay, there's one. But anyway, I am going to hopefully give you guys enough confidence that you can understand the whole concept and how things are done. So just so you know, my background is I did my undergraduate in communication design. I went on to write about 24 books on Illustrator and Photoshop and all the Adobe Creative Suite products, and was pulled into UX design about 10 years ago, and that was just because we started doing so many projects, and really was, I actually love the whole UX process now, and it's really closely related to design, but it's not design like a graphic designer. And that's the big thing that I want to get across, is that you don't need to be a graphic designer. You can be a developer, and you can be a very good designer of an application if you just understand some of the processes that you can follow. And it might be very different than what you think. Now, UX, the whole term of UX, user experience, wasn't really coined until the late 1990s, so it's something new. Before then, people did UI design. Now it's user experience. And I think once I start explaining the whole design process, I think it'll help you understand why it's called user experience, UX, and how it's related to the actual design. And I am leaning this towards application design, even though I have a lot of examples and things in here of industrial design. It all comes down to pretty much the same thing. So, starting out, oh, and I should mention too, I'm a designer, but I'm also an MVP of Expression Blend, so I step into code enough to be dangerous, but I don't live in Visual Studio. Okay, so what this session is going to cover, real quick example of good design through history, methods that you can start integrating good design into the work you're doing, and then tips to help you keep your content focused. And that's when I'll go into some things on grids, and I'll talk about type, and that is true graphic design stuff, but little things that you should understand as a developer so that you don't make bad decisions later when you start working on your apps. So, design, basically, creation of a dialogue between a person, product, and service, no matter what it is. So, good design is based upon needs of the user. It offers simplified solutions for complex tasks and does not detract from what the product is great at. And this, have any of you been through some of the Metro style app sessions? It's funny. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of this whole same concept. These are basic design fundamentals that they've embraced. And so you can see, and I'll mention that as I go through some of the Metro style principles. So just to give you an example, like things in history, Dieter Rams was a designer for bronze. And you can see here, this is industrial design, but still following the same concepts. And so you can see he's got here a product from 1959. And excuse me. I think I'm going to take this off while I cough for a second. But anyway, you can see that way back in 1959, he followed some really good design concepts. This is actually a record player radio combination. Good design makes a product useful. How many of you have heard of Jonathan Ives? Apple, okay, lead designer, iPad, and iPhone, and all the other industrial design that he does. Apparently, this was the thing that influenced him to go into industrial design, is his parents got one of these Braun design juicers. And again, good design makes a product useful. It's just like an app or anything else. It's a really useful product, and it's very simple, and it's very clean. Good design makes a product more understandable. So here we've got this pretty complex piece of equipment, but Dieter Rams for Braun, of course, broke this down into something that was a lot more simple to understand. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to put a cough drop in. Okay, so anyway, same concept throughout. He does have 10 principles of good design that follow everything: app design, industrial design, architecture. And I'm just going to list these here. Good design is innovative. So, of course, coming up with new ideas is always good. It makes your product useful. We've already discussed that. It's aesthetic. Makes a product understandable. And again, this relates to everything. It's unobtrusive. It's honest. Long-lasting. Never goes out of style. Thorough down to the last detail. Environmentally friendly. And also has as little design as possible. So just applying these concepts to even your app, whether it's a mobile app or a Windows 8 app or whatever it may be, these concepts of good design follow everything. So, for example, here's a Windows app, a Windows 8 app. Really simple, really clean, follows what the user needs are, just real quickly can go in. It's got a lot of good use of white space, and I'm going to talk more about this as I go on. Good or bad? You find design everywhere. I mean, somebody actually thought to put the signs up like this. But this is like some apps out there that you see, too. Okay, please use revolving door or pool. I love this one. If I were in a wheelchair, I'm not quite sure what I would do with this. But it's, you guys know, because you're out there all the time, you're experiencing it, too. It's when you go into the parking garage and you can't fit in the space, or you know, your car scrapes along the top of the garage as you pull in, or whatever it may be. It's in websites, too. You know, this is an actual website. I cut out the name, Time Warner. But but this is what it looks like when you go to it, depending upon the browser that you're in. You know, this is also has to do with design. Anyone know what this is? Okay, this is United Airlines' new software. When they merged with Continental, this is what they progressed into. I got behind the desk and took a picture of this when they weren't looking because it took them. This is why all the Continental United issues. To do anything, they have to type in numbers. Talk about bad design. This is probably the classic, yet it looks like something that Eastern Airlines might have used in 1980. But so it's out there. Good design is totally related to user experience. And that's why I was saying I can't cover just good design, like, hey, make your picture look really pretty. Because it really isn't a standalone problem. You know, design, you can't just make something look nice. It has to do with user experience. And in fact, if you have a better designed app or a more well-designed app, you actually can increase your buyer conversion. So if you have a game or something that you have a trial version, if it's well designed, more people will convert to buying it. You'll get more unique visitors if it's a website, more return users, increased session duration, less percentage of abandoned sales, and a higher conversion for trial to paid use, which I already mentioned. So lots of reasons. And it's not just me saying that. There's actually been studies on this. And just a simple 1% increase in customer experience quality gives you a 0.84 increase in revenues and a 1.66 increase in use on websites. And this is an actual study that was done. So if you're looking for ammunition to go in and say, hey, we really need to invest in designing our application better, it's been proven that a more well-designed app actually is more successful. So this is the big thing that I want to get across, because I think this confuses a lot of people. Design's not about adding pretty pictures and buttons. And if you think it is, then you're probably going to be spending a lot of time doing things that aren't as important as following the whole user flow. And the other thing I want to get across is this. Content in boxes does not make a good design. And all these people who now see Windows 8 decide that if they put their content in boxes, it's a good design. It has nothing to do with it. In fact, I'm traveling the world right now for the Windows 8 team, and I'm teaching designers how to build Metro 8 apps, Metro-style apps for Windows 8. And it's one thing I just want to get across. Just because you put it in boxes does not make it a really well-designed app. It has to have some thought behind it. Here's the thing. Design's about understanding what your product is best at and then focusing the design on what is important to the user. And this is the most critical thing that you can do. So, like, just as an example, I just brought up the calendar app for Windows 8, and it's a calendar, and that's all it does. It's totally focused on what it does. Somebody opens it, they know that they're supposed to set dates. It's very clear, there's no distractions. This is what it does. This is what it's best at, being a calendar, scheduling events. This is the finance app. Somebody who wants to go find information, financial information, knows they can go to this app and quickly find the information that they need, the timely information that they need. Again, no distractions. It's totally focused on the needs of the user. I hate to pick on this airline, but but is this focus? You know, this is a website, yes, but this is how a lot of apps are built. I have the opportunity, by looking at this, to schedule a trip to California, book a hotel flight, vacation or flight, print my boarding pass, or read my miles. It's totally distracting. It doesn't follow any user flow. It's poorly designed as far as user experience. And you see a lot of this. You know, focusing the design on what is important to the user? No, not really. And it's a different way of thinking when you start really designing based upon user needs. And in fact, what I'm going to do as I go through today is actually take you through the steps that a user experience designer might take so you have a good understanding of how that flow goes, and then lead it into the design of an actual app. Another good example of, you know, maybe something that's not totally focused. That's really good. You always love those animated GIFs. But not focused on the needs of the user. They can travel. They can pick a hotel, transport, get their China visa. You got it all here, which is great. I'll show you ways to address some of these things later as we go through. So as I said before, you can't separate design from UX design. It's totally related. You don't have to, you know, follow this flowchart exactly, but I'm going to, just so that you have a better understanding of what the process is. Just quickly go through what should be done before you even start coding. And it cracks me up. I've worked with a lot of developers, and I've worked with developers who, when they come up with an application, the first thing they do is launch Visual Studio and start coding without any thought to the layout or to design or the flow of their application. They just came up with a really cool idea, came up with lots of features, and they're just going to throw them all in there. And that isn't the way that you create a really well-designed, successful application. So just quickly reviewing this, and I'll go into more detail as I go through the deck, but there needs to be a little bit of research, obviously. If you're building a large application, more research, the better. But if you're just an independent developer, at least understanding the user and maybe sitting down with the user, or actually if you do want to create a really good app, it's been discovered that focus groups are bad, like asking people in groups what to do, because you get a lot of really strong personalities in there where people start voicing their opinion and then everyone goes along with them. And so maybe online forums where people send their questions or their requests online and they're not visible to others is probably a better way to get research. Once you've done that a little bit, then you need to do what's called create an application statement. And this goes way back in UX. This is something that we've been doing when we've designed applications for well over 10 years, and that is just come up with one sentence saying, all right, before I create this app, let me just think about this, and in one sentence come up with what this application is best at before I waste all my time and lose my focus and start going down different paths. Let me really focus on what its purpose is in life and how it's going to be best. If you've gone through any Metro-style app training, they call that the best app statement. But it's really nothing different than what's been done for years. Once you've done that, you start brainstorming scenarios. And again, I'm going to go through this. I'm just going to quickly go through this chart and then go into more detail as I go through. But scenarios are not features. They're ways that people might use your application. And it's a really good idea to think about that instead of features. And then from that, consider the features and sketch out a really rough architecture. From that, you build an information architecture that's a little bit more detailed so that you know exactly what's going to be on each screen. You sketch your layout, do a low fidelity prototype, maybe some wireframes, a little bit of visual design, and again, like I said, I'm going to show you more information on this. And then, as a UX designer, you would then manage the design with each sprint. And so this is very different than going into Photoshop and Illustrator, coming up with a really cool design, and then giving it to a developer and walking away. Real good designers understand the development process, and they're involved in it long after they give you wireframes or tell you this is the design that they want to use. Okay. How many of you have a sketchbook? Anybody? Okay, a lot more. You guys need to get online and order yourself some sketchbooks. You really need to have something in your hands that you can jot notes in. You can come up with ideas. You do not have to be an artist to be a good designer. You don't have to be a good artist at all. You just have to be able to jot down ideas, maybe where you are, if you're trying to figure out where controls go or whatever it may be, little sketches are fine. But without this, you're not iterating enough. And what I mean by that is you're latching onto ideas because you invested a lot of time in them, and then you're not changing them because you don't want to give up on ideas. And that is the worst place to be, is to have invested 3 days in the layout of an app to discover that it's not working and then keeping it because you don't have 3 days to reinvest in building it. You build something, you pencil it out, you sketch it out. You don't like it, you crumble it up, and you throw it away. And if you don't have 25 pieces of crumbled paper on the floor beside you before you start coding or start doing anything that requires a little bit more effort or work, then you're not iterating enough. And even if you think you have your idea down, you want to continue sketching and coming up with ideas. It's really, really critical. So originally, like I said, we were going to do a hands-on thing, but I'm going to just, instead, I changed up the presentation, so I'll take you through. But I want to create an app, just a sample app, to kind of take you through the process so you can see how this is done all the way through to the design stage. And so focus my app and thereby design it better. So I'm going to think of a sports app that I can run on any device. I do have some examples from previous sessions because we've done this all over the place. Favorite team news, all the news, images, videos, and blogs of your favorite teams in one place. So these are just ideas for applications. This isn't even starting the process yet. This is just somebody coming up with an idea. Finding a local team app that finds a team that is playing in the local area. And the last one's my favorite. This came from Australia. A female developer in Australia came up with the idea of a stalking app that follows players and what they're wearing and basically where they are. And I thought that was a kind of cool idea. So like I said, now I'm going through this flow chart, but now you can see a little bit more detail. I'm going to create an application statement, one sentence. What is it great at? And I'm just going to take one of my examples. And so I'll just say, my sports app is the best in its category at finding the latest news, videos, and feeds on my favorite team and then allowing me to share them with my friends. When I work with people I consult with a lot of people who are creating applications as well. When I work with them, once they create this sentence, we go back to it all the time. And we keep referring back to it. Because otherwise, your application can lose focus. And all of a sudden, somebody in another department or wherever they may be comes back and says, I want this really cool feature in this app. And you have to go back to your application statement. Does that really fit into the focus of what we're doing? If it doesn't, it doesn't make sense, and it probably doesn't have a place in your app, and it'll probably lead to a poor design, poor navigation, people probably getting lost in your app, or not finding that feature anyway. So you really have to stick to this. While you're going through the process of coming up with your concept, you can go back and change this over and over and over again before you start the next stages of design. So it's not like you have to come up with this once. If somebody comes to me and says, oh my gosh, we totally forgot to put something in about putting stuff on YouTube. Well then, I can rewrite this as many times as I need to. But once we start the whole development process, I can't go back to this. So once the developers have taken over and they're doing code, this is what we stick to. And if somebody else comes up with a really cool idea, that's a great idea, but it's not in this app. You know, maybe that's something else. But it's critical to create this. You set priorities for your design. So how you do that, this again leads to how it's going to be laid out and everything else. You brainstorm user scenarios, stories about how people will use your app and what their goals are when they're using it. Now, in UX, we do a lot more. I'm giving you a quick rundown of this whole process, but at this point, this is when a UX person might come up with stories or personas and actually create people's names. And Ralph is a traveling salesman and he wants to find tickets for the local game, whatever. They actually will go into great detail here. What I'm saying for you is that if you're the developer and you're trying to come up and at least follow this process a little bit to create a better design, at least come up with a scenario or story or situation in which somebody might be using your application. So a real simple way of doing this without getting into all the other detail is think of a possible situation that people are going to use your application, and simply what their goals are. And again, notice I'm staying away from features. I'm not picking features yet, and that's the big difference between somebody who doesn't have user experience design, or at least design background, and somebody who's in development. They want to immediately showcase features, and that's not how it's done. So an example of scenarios for the sports app that I was talking about earlier. Business user wants to quickly find the latest news for his favorite team and tweet it to his friends. And the goals are to find news and tweet it. So I'm just coming up with a scenario, and it may seem weird or strange to people who haven't done this before to come up with these little situations or examples, but they're critical because this determines what goes on your first screen. This determines how big items and controls are. This determines the flow, the navigation of your application, these stories or these scenarios that you create. So I've got another one. Traveler wants to find live games based upon his location and buy his tickets. So this was for my second app. And maybe in this one, find games, buy tickets is important. And again, these are goals. These are not features. I'm not saying, hey, I've got a map here that you click on and then this happens. None of that. I'm just simply coming up with a situation. And this is the stuff that you want to jot down and that you want to include in your sketchbook as you think of ideas. Then here's the last one. This is the stalking app. Wants to surf for images and news of designated hot soccer players, and they want to just quickly find images and news on their players that they're stalking or whatever. But again, it's just scenarios. And again, I want to make it really clear that scenarios are not features, and the difference is that a scenario simply is coming up with a situation that somebody might be using to reach a goal. And a feature is what helps them to reach that goal. So once you've come up with scenarios of how people are going to use your application, then you can come up with the features and align them to those scenarios. So you can see how it's all related. This is why you don't just come up and just throw stuff down on a screen. It's because it has to all align. The features align with the scenarios. The scenarios align with that initial statement. So user wants to quickly find the latest news for his favorite team and tweet about it to his friends. The features are search, favorites, RSS feed, video, share. Business traveler wants to find live games based upon his location and buy tickets. Location aware map and store. So these are when I'm determining the features. Wants to surf for images and news of designated hot soccer players and share them with others. That was search, gallery, sort, share. So that's when I start mapping the features. I don't put features in until I've aligned it all. And the interesting thing is when you build Metro apps, the way, I think you've probably all seen the hubs, like you go into your initial application and you've got the panorama. When you build Metro-style apps, the concept is they want, the Windows 18 would want everyone to think of scenarios first and features based upon that. When you go into the hub, each one of those sections is supposed to be a scenario. Okay? That's the way it's supposed to be built. And then when you click on a section, then you have more information about that content, and then that's where you have your features in that app bar. So it's totally related to design, whether Metro or regular design. So this is going through the flow chart again. You thought of your scenarios, you thought of your features. Now you just start sketching it out, and I mean really low fidelity, just sketching, and never start on the computer. I know really good designers who start working in Illustrator or Photoshop right away, and that will just kill the application process because, again, just like when you start developing right away, there's no opportunity for iteration. It takes too long. You become attached to your artwork. You want to do this on paper and just continue to iterate as much as you can. So once you've kind of mapped out where everything's going to go, then you can start sketching a layout. And if you notice, you don't have to be a designer. And this is the big thing that I want to get across. You can be a developer and be a very good UX designer. The visual part, you can pass on to somebody later. Like if the visual part of the design, like, hey, can you make my buttons look really good? Can you make my images and background look really good? But this is actually where I want these items because I'm following my scenario. And it's important to have this stuff on the initial screen and that these controls be this big. So you can see in this example, there's just X's for photographs and just really roughed out text. You don't have to be an artist. You can just think through this process. Once you've sketched this out, and again, this may be different for you if you're a developer, but this is very common practice for us as designers. We take our sketches, we sit down with somebody, and we point with our finger, and we say, okay, so they go here, and then it's going to go like this. And then when they pick this, then they're going to have these options over here. And we talk it through, and as we're talking it through, we realize how many dead ends we've got, or when something's broken, or when something doesn't make sense. But it's really important, you take your finger and you point at this stuff. And you can even go so far as to create what's called a paper prototype, where you just use post-its and paper and cut them out and rough it out. But again, when I'm teaching people to build Metro-style apps or any kind of apps, we spend, in the full training, we spend 2 or 3 days never touching a computer because it's all done with your mind and your pencil and paper and figuring things out because it's so quick and it's so easy. And by the time that people are done with this process, they really get it and they feel comfortable with it. And if you get it right here, it's going to save, could save weeks of time in the development process because I know that many of you have had to deal with somebody coming back to you 6 months into the development process and saying, can we just add a button? You know, can we just add this feature? And it's not easy to do. I mean, you've got to deal with layout issues and navigation and everything else. You get the buy-in with something like this, really low fidelity, you're going to save yourself a lot of time later in production. You wouldn't do this, but what you might provide are the sketches to, it could even be a graphic designer at that point, because you've done all the UX work, or maybe a user experience designer, but then they might take what you've done and turn them into wireframes. And this is just something done in Illustrator, but it was based upon just sketches. But now we know exactly, hey, you know, it would be easier if we said, number one, let's put the title in, and then let's put the description in, and how we're going to follow it, and let's leave that space off to the right in case we need to put anything else in there. But just this whole process was thought of before somebody went and spent the time doing this in something like Adobe Illustrator. And after that, a real designer might provide visual design. But again, this is just colorizing and adding logo and adding artwork to the experience. The UX process all before here, all the sketching, iteration, prototyping, all that has led to this. And this you probably wouldn't be great at because you don't live in Illustrator and Photoshop, but if you've already developed the experience, that's something that you can give off to an artist as a sketch and make it clear what appears on each screen and have them maybe complete the visual design part. And then adding some documentation to that. So just explaining where everything's going to go and all the interactions. This is just another step that a UX designer would do just to make sure that it's communicated well with the developer, what each one of these controls and areas are going to do. So what I was going to do here is I am going to go into some more design stuff. So I want to explain some of the tools that typically designers use, and I'm going to show you some integration with the Microsoft tools, which is really cool that you can do this. But obviously, Photoshop is huge, but I hate the fact that people use it for design. And the reason why is it's bitmap. You can have some vector stuff in there, obviously, but it's bitmap. And now more than ever, with Windows 8 coming out on multiple resolutions and different screen sizes, that's a big issue. If somebody's providing you with assets that are created as pixel, they're going to become bitmap as they go up to the larger screens and higher resolutions. So something to think about. I convince almost every designer I know to not design in Photoshop. Do your photographs in there, that's fine. But if you want to design, use Adobe Illustrator, because Illustrator has vector artwork. So you can see, I can actually change the size of this. Vector artwork is mathematically created, so it's scalable to any size. It can be dropped into pretty much anything, and just is organized better for creating artwork and layout. Some other things that people use, just so you're familiar with the tools, in case you're working with somebody who's designing or you're stepping into yourself. Fireworks is also part of the Adobe Creative Suite, and many designers use this for prototyping, because Fireworks, which comes, if you have the Creative Suite at your business, you've got it there. You probably just don't know it, because I think maybe 1% of the people of the Creative Suite actually know this application is in there, but it allows you to create one master page and then create multiple pages off of that, and then actually build links so that you can build a working prototype of your app before you even take it any further. So that's another one that designers will use. And another one that I'm not real thrilled with, but you're going to hear people talking about, it's so popular out there right now, is an online prototyping software called Balsamiq that gives you this sketchy look to allow you to build apps. And I am not thrilled with that, because there's something better out there. So these are just the popular tools that designers use, but the ones they should use are Illustrator, like I said, and then Sketchflow, which is part of Expression Blend. And I'm going to do a little demo here so you guys can see how that all works together. And like I said, it's even more critical now to understand, you know, how your artwork's coming in than before. So let me go back to that, because I do want to show you one more thing here. That's what your, if you use Expression Blend, that's what Sketchflow looks like. It everything's sketchy, so you can design real quickly your prototype. And it looks like sketches, but the really cool thing is it's working controls, working scroll bars, working buttons, working list box. Everything works. You can even type. You can even use data store to save information, so when somebody clicks on a button, they're welcomed on the next page. Totally functioning app, and in this sketchy form. And not enough people use that, but it is part of Expression Blend. Okay, so I promised you a little bit of a demo here, just of the process. And so I have Adobe Illustrator open, and as you can see, I've got just some artwork in here, and you know, I could take this, move it around, whatever I want to do. I'm the designer. I've created this, and I also now want to bring this into Expression Blend. This is a whole new, I wouldn't say new. I mean, this has been a workflow that's been around for years, but not a lot of people take advantage of it. But I can actually take native Illustrator files and drop them right into Expression Blend. And if you've never worked with Expression Blend before, it's just building solution files just like Visual Studio, and I can open it in Visual Studio, or I can open Expression Blend. And right now, I don't have the latest release of Blend in here, because it doesn't have all the features that I need at this point. It's still in development. But you'll see that I can just simply take this file, and I can save it right out of Illustrator, And if I'm working with a designer or I'm doing this myself and I want to continue the process, I can just go into Expression Blend, which is, of course, a Microsoft tool. Any of you use Expression Blend now? Some. Oh, actually, quite a few. That's good. Not responding. There we go. That's good. I must have hit that quit. So we'll just get that back up and running. So the really nice thing about this is that if you are getting more involved in design, you can do a lot of it up until this point. And maybe you're not great in illustration, or maybe you are. Maybe you can actually take it into Adobe Illustrator and just simply put together some simple logos or pieces of artwork that you want to use. Wow. And it's a hardware issue. Do you see my Mac? It's running boot camp. This is running Windows. I should have, you know, I usually have my sticker on there that says I'm a PC, but it fell off. Because I take so much slack for that. Okay, so we'll just use the task manager and end that right away. Okay, end the process, good. There we go. Now it's happy. The interesting thing is, too, I'm going to be bringing this into Expression Blend, but the other tool that a lot of people use, as I explained, is Photoshop as well. And you as developers can even take native Photoshop files in, because in Blend, I can either drop in native Illustrator or Photoshop files. Look at that. Now, I had this all launched and ready, so I wouldn't have to deal with this, but there we go. Photoshop, and there we go. Now we got two instances of Blend. There we go. So as I was saying before, I'm just going to go through the process using this version, because if you have the latest bits that came off, they haven't incorporated the import Illustrator yet into that, but it will be in there soon. And I may just have to talk you through this, because it looks like it is just dying. You know, maybe I'll just go back to the deck, and then when I think it might be done spinning, I'll come back. Ah, look. You heard the threat. So you can see there's the sketch flow if you want to create a sketch flow app. I'm just choosing Silverlight. If you've seen the latest Blend, your choices there are basically HTML5 or XAML. So I'm just choosing this is XAML. But once this comes up, you'll see that I can totally incorporate my artwork in here. So I'm just going to take the user control and go to my properties. I'm going to change this, like maybe I'm creating a Metro app, so that's going to be 1366 by 780. And then you'll notice that I can choose File, Import Adobe Illustrator File. The other nice thing about using Illustrator is that, there it is that you can also you can save as SVG. So when you're building Metro-style apps, you want to make sure that you're getting vector either by using native Illustrator files or by saving as SVG and then dropping those in. But you'll see that it put this into a canvas for me automatically. Got my background. These are the layers that were created in Illustrator, so it actually remembered those. And then I can also come in here and say, import a Photoshop file, and it will recognize layers here. So if I'm working on my own files or with another designer, I can actually choose to turn this stuff off and on, drop it in here, and maybe this Find Classes button over here. I want to just right-click on this, and I can even say, make that into a control. I want you to be a button or whatever I want it to be. Get rid of that content presenter. Boop. delete, go back out of my template. But now you see I have properties for a button. But it's that easy, the flow, working through this. Those of you who are designers might notice that this looks just like Illustrator. You know, and I can go in here and set properties and change color and everything else. But the thing is, in the background, in this case, it's writing XAML for me. And if I really wanted to, I could even take this project, this solution file, and edit in Visual Studio. So the process is really nice if you do work with designers or if you're doing it yourself and you want to follow through. But that was my quick little demo here. And it's trying to open the same project, the project file. There we go. And there it is. If I work in Visual Studio, it reflects back in its brush and blend. If I work in Blend, it reflects back into Visual Studio. So really nice if you take on some of the design aspect. No. Gosh. Did you guys ever see that video where, it's old, I wish I could find it again, where every time you got an error in an application, somebody at Microsoft sitting in a chair got like a spike in them? Do you remember that? So if you were a user, like you'd see this guy go, ow! And it was the developer who was responsible for that part of the code. Okay, so it's preparing it, but I think you guys have the idea. And basically, the reason I went through that is because I wanted you to understand the tools. They're not foreign to you, and you can use them too. And you can integrate them into your workflow. So if you're working with people who are doing the visual design, you can take that very easily and incorporate it into your development. So next, I'm going to talk about actual layout now. And this is a thing that is more important than ever, especially if you are considering doing Metro-style apps because they have a specific grid that is to be followed. But grids have been around for a very long time. I'm going to give you some examples of some and how they're used, because whether you're creating a Metro-style app or any kind of app, or you're even a photographer or any kind of designer, it's a really good idea to understand how you can use these grids. And going back to this whole user experience thing, you're going to position stuff on your grid based upon priority. The largest priority, get the largest proportion of your app. So again, it all comes back to user experience and scenarios, what was most critical. And that's what's going to take over your grid or maximize it. So how to use a grid? Grid is the most vivid manifestation and will to order in design. And it organizes information within a certain space. So helps you to keep information really clear and accessible. It lessens visual noise. And the result is clearer and more accessible communication. So it's been used for ages in print, on screen, basically in nature. You know, some examples going all the way back to 3000 BC, they're laying out information in a grid to make it really clear. 1486, you know, this is all books, and they're the ones who first started using the grid. It's just continued through on-screen design as well. So I'm going to talk about three different types of grids that designers are using now when they're laying out content. And the first one is rule of thirds, and then the golden mean, or golden ratio, whatever you want to call it. It's got lots of names, phi. And then also the metro-style grid. The rule of thirds is really interesting. How many of you are photographers? Okay, quite a few. And how many of you have heard of rule of thirds? Okay, almost every photographer. Yeah. If you're an amateur photographer, you'll love this one because it really helps to make better images, but it's also used in app design and layout in general. But the rule of thirds is when you a designer an image should be imagined as divided into 9 equal parts, and that important compositional elements should be placed along these lines or their intersections. So I'll start out with an example of a photograph, but when you look, which one is more dynamic? The right side. You know, it's not centered. Same with this. You know, it's you can see the bird and the smack in the center. It's not a really dynamic composition, but you just slide it up or you crop it so that bird is in that intersection of a couple of those lines, and all of a sudden you have a much more dynamic composition. So you can see it's used in photography a lot. But it's also used in design. Like this is a poster design, and the important elements end up on those intersections. And it's also used in websites. So some people use this grid just to decide where they're going to put critical elements in their layout, things that they want people to see quickly and easily. And then you can even see, like, you know, Apple, the page, the landscape. It's broken down into this grid of rule of thirds. Really easy way to help you to organize your content and keep a lot of white space. So you can take this rule of thirds and change it any way you want, as long as you stay within those proportions. But you can combine sides or use just a block or whatever. But you can see that by just using that as a grid to start your app, you would, if you were doing this in real life, you might start building it and taking the largest area and putting that really critical scenario in. Like maybe, you know, this is for the user who they want to see their favorite teams and the latest news. Let's put it in a big block over here, and then we'll put some information at the top and the search up here in the upper right. But it gives you a starting point when you're creating your apps so that you're following this through and it looks consistent, and it also is visually pleasing to the user as well. And again, it just makes sense. It gives you enough room. It's almost like a puzzle putting together that you can create a really consistent, nice layout. If you're a Photoshop user, you'll even notice that, like, for instance, if I am in Photoshop and I go to the crop tool, you'll see that that's up there in my crop tool options, because if you are a photographer, you can take this and move your image around to align on those certain items. Like I might take and align the water on one of those lines and then this point, so that when I crop, I have a much more dynamic image. So it's used throughout the industry in lots of different ways. Okay. Okay, how many of you heard of the Golden Region? Yeah, Fibonacci sequence, all that stuff. There's a number sequence, and I don't even want to bother asking you guys. When I ask the designers what the next number is, they sit there for like 10 minutes. No, not all of them, but when I ask the developers, they're like, bam, you know, they know, you know, 0111. What is the next number? Yeah, see? Like instant. So those of you who didn't get it, you're adding up the two numbers, 01 equal 1, 1 and 2 equal 3, 3 and 5 equal 8, just to explain. But yeah, that whole golden rule or region or Fibonacci sequence is huge right now in design and used in more places than you can imagine. I am starting to lose my voice again, so hold on. We'll try not to drop the mic this time. So this is how the sequence was discovered. Oh, my. Yeah, there was a mathematical competition back in 1225. And of course, Fibonacci participated. Oh my gosh. Hold on. Okay. So beginning with the single pair of rabbits, if every month each productive pair bears a new pair, you guys probably all know this story, which becomes productive when they are 1 month old, how many rabbits will there be after N months? So this is the original formula and how it came out. And so obviously that's not in our really realistic situation, but the numbers that he came up with, which I'm going to go into more in a little bit, do actually appear in nature. And flowers and daisies in the way sunflowers are packed, and lots of examples too that, you know, as far as humans created. So the golden ratio or divine proportion, it's a geometric proportion that's been theorized to be the most aesthetically pleasing to the eye. And the shape of your iPad and iPhone and Windows phone, that's all built on this golden region. Also, the Egyptians supposedly used it to guide the construction of the pyramids. Architecture in ancient Athens is thought to be based upon it, like the Parthenon. Leonardo da Vinci supposedly used it when he painted the Mona Lisa, like the proportions in that image. And found in nature, of course. They even found it, the hawk follows it when it's circling its prey, which is kind of interesting, that same like spiral. So this is how you use it in design. Basically, you use it to set up ratios. And so if you have a layout, like for instance, you're designing for the tablet, let's say, and the recommended size for developing for tablet right now is 1366 by 780. Well, then you would divide that size by 1.62, and that starts building the golden region. So you can see here's the 1366, and then if I divide it by 1.62, then I'm left with this. I divide this section by 1.62, then I'm left with this. It continues as I work. I can continue to break it down into that ratio and then constantly keep that really nice visually pleasing aspect ratio in my design. When application designers are using this, they're also looking at this area over here, depending upon where it is, you know, how their layout is, and they're trying to put some of the most important items in that area because that seems to work and it seems to be more aesthetically pleasing to people as well. Plus, the horizontal scanning, just so you know, it's been proven that people scan images more in that landscape view anyway. So who uses this? Facebook uses this. So you've got the golden region applied to the proportions that they use. Twitter. Netflix. Zoom. But notice that as it spirals in, do you see how like the really important items, like as I go back to this, start your 1 month for membership. Twitter has since changed a little bit, but that's where the new tweets were. You know, that's upcoming events. This was before the new Facebook layout, which I absolutely hate, but I'm not gonna say anything. And even in just artwork. And of course, Windows Phone, because this is also shaped, you know, in the golden region. It's used all over the place. Dieter Rams even used it when he designed his equipment, which is really interesting. So it's tried and true, you know, method of laying out content. Just gives you a place to start. So anyway, I'm going to wrap up with that grid, but I want to make sure you guys understand the whole concept of this is that if you're just laying stuff out, just dead center is dead wrong. Don't always just don't just throw everything down the center. There are some grids that can help you to develop or at least lay out your content with a little bit more interest. And these guides, these grids are out there to help you, but this one especially. So I actually have the grid. I made it in Illustrator, and I use it as an overlay in my design in many cases, just to make sure it's proportionally correct. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the Metro grid just real quickly. This is based upon a 20-pixel unit and a 5-pixel unit, and as long as you stay within this area, you can pretty much do whatever you want. But this is when it's really important to understand that if you guys don't understand a little bit about user scenarios and features that are important to your users, every single person will end up developing an app that looks just like that template that comes out of Visual Studio, you know, with all the boxes, the grid template. So by understanding and doing a little work on user experience, you can decide what is most critical to put in here and what proportions should I use. So like, for instance, I can totally change the way my app looks by just using different shapes in here. And so maybe this number one is the most critical scenario that I'm trying to follow. And it, you know, this is the one that is the primary focus of my app. And then it just goes down from there. Just different arrangements, all using that same grid. The point of using that grid is that you don't just randomly put things down. You actually align them on the grid. And you actually use a consistent amount of spaces between. Like, for instance, maybe you use 2 units, which is 10 pixels between each of your objects. Or maybe you're starting a new section, so you might have 80 pixels between each object. But you don't start things in between those units. You use them to help you to align things really quickly and easily. I'm going back to this example, where you have the larger, most important scenario played up at the front, and then maybe you go down from there. And if you are building a Metro app, each one of your sections, like I said, would align to a scenario that you already determined earlier. So that's all I'm going to say about the Metro app right now. This is the really big thing that I want to get across. White space, when you're working in these grids, it's okay to have. I don't know how many developers, it just kills me. I was just with somebody not too long ago, and they're like, yeah, here's some white space. That means we can put some ads in here. It's like, no, it's okay. You can leave it white. It really does direct the user to more important items. It relaxes the eye, lets people want to look at your screen, and it's not stressful for them to look at it. So, again, if you feel unsure and you're not confident in how to design an app, stick with your grid, lay out your content, and if you can leave, based upon your grid, sections that are clear or don't necessarily need to have information in them, it's a really good idea to do that, and it does help your user. And it doesn't have to be, this is just a website example, it doesn't have to be white. You know, it can be other colors. And, you know, here's an app for the Honda Civic or whatever. But, you know, it doesn't have to be white, but it's still space. And it's laid out in a grid, and it's left clear. They didn't decide they're going to fill it all in with buttons because they could. Last thing I'm going to talk about is type. And this is also critical now, mostly because people are super intuitive about text now. They know that text is content. You don't need to have a picture and then text beside it that says click here. Or, you know, people know that they can actually click on the text. And this is a big part of Metro style, too. The text is the content. They click on the header, and it actually takes them to that section. You don't need another button beside it, or an arrow beside it, or whatever. So I actually like this website. You know, you can click on the text and get a message. So get creative, you hack. So you're reading this this thinking it might be slightly interesting, maybe because the title seemed catchy, not because this applies to you, whatever. I mean, he just used the text as the content. Your Metro apps, as I was discussing earlier, text is the content. I know I can click on Redmond. I know that I can click on these days. It's more critical than ever to understand text. And there is something about text that you need to understand. And especially if you're designing applications, you can't just use any typeface that's out there. And so I just put this, enough knowledge to be dangerous, but you should know things like, for instance, what the cap height is, you know, the capital letter height, and the X height, which is the letter of a small X. Counters, this is probably one of the most critical things. That's that space in between, like the E and the P. Baseline, and then you've got the sender line. And you can see they're very different on each one of those words. But the big thing to understand is that not every typeface will look good in your app. And in fact, Sago, which was developed for Windows Phone originally, Windows 8, is perfectly designed for on-screen. And there are some other very good apps out there, but if you have a company font that somebody's insisting on using, it may not provide the best solution. Another thing I just want to mention, what sans serif is, no serif, no little hooks on the end, and serif. Because I'm going to discuss that a little bit, but typically serif sometimes doesn't appear, most times doesn't appear as well on the screen as the sans serif. So here are things that have been proven over and over again if you're doing building your own apps. The X height between 65 and 80% of the cap height is good. You don't want a really small X height with really big, large descenders and ascenders, you know, like the G hanging out or the capital T or whatever. You want to have strong counters. This is probably the most important thing. That's that space, again, between the letters, like here in the O or the B or the O over here. You want to have straight, even widths and no excessive descenders so they don't cross into each other. Other things to consider with text. Anybody speak German? Okay. You can say what this word means. What does that mean? Something about a boat captain, right? Yeah. Somebody said it? This is actually, it is the longest word in German. So, but the reason I did that is because it's a lot of stuff that people don't consider when they design things. And so when you're designing your app, also consider things about your layout. Like, you know, maybe this might be a better solution than putting it across. Little things. Okay. Question, would this be good for on-screen? No. Got that little tiny counter in that E that's totally going to fill in. No, again. You know, just, and these are fonts that are typically used. I see them used a lot in on-screen apps. You know, Garamond. But look at the way that E looks like. That would totally fill in. And Poplar, it's just cute on print, but not on screen. You know, again, that actually has a pretty strong counter. That's not as bad as some of the others. But but if you're a developer and you're making decisions on type for your app, that's something that you want to consider and make sure that you actually check that stuff. So type on screen considerations, be space efficient, don't make it look compressed, and have the same or similar width for all weights and styles. I'm done. That was like consolidated, crammed in design. So I left time for questions, or else you guys can come up and see me, but I am really focused on Metro style apps right now too, so if you have questions that are specific to that, feel free to come up and ask me questions.